You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer. It's Cover the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
It's Friday. We've got a lot to talk about today, including the Blake Griffin trade, which we haven't discussed at length yet, Greg Monroe signing with the Celtics, this crazy report that LeBron might consider signing with the Warriors, and how all of these things affect the Heat. But let's start with some news that we have here. Number one being that Wayne Ellington will be in the three-point contest. I think you and I, David, expected this to be the case. Ellington will join Devin Booker, Klay Thompson, Eric Gordon, Bradley Beal, Paul George, Tobias Harris, and Kyle Lowry in that three-point contest. Do you think he's got a chance?
I don't know. Part of the problem is that I don't know if Ellington's much of a standstill shooter. And the way he shoots his threes for Miami, obviously he comes off so many screens, he's constantly moving. I wonder if it's going to be a problem for him. And moreover, whether or not it changes the way he shoots after the fact. You know, like if he participates in this three-point shootout, is it going to affect his rhythm or something like that?
Because he's
in
such a home run derby syndrome.
Yeah, something like that. Look, among the guys that are in the shootout, I think he definitely has a chance. I mean, Paul George is having a really good year. Tobias Harris is having a really good year. But I don't know that I necessarily qualify them as shooters. Lowry, too, if I can recall, last time he was in a three-point shootout, not a very strong performance there. So guys that can shoot better in-game than necessarily like in front of a rack or going around the perimeter with a rack. So – to be honest with you, I put him in the top three right now, maybe with Devin Booker and Klay Thompson.
You know, I think if they had Kelly Olynyk there instead of the rack, Ellington might do better. Yes. You know, have Olynyk just hand him the ball, and then Ellington can curl around a screen behind him and then shoot it.
Yeah, except Olynyk would give him the fake dribble handoff and then dunk it or something like that.
That's fine. That would be a really interesting wrinkle in the three-point contest if instead of those racks, they had just their teammate follow them around and hand him the ball. That might be kind of fun.
I think too much time would eat into it.
Yeah, you'd have to like maybe break up the racks a little bit instead of having like, what is it, five or six different spots? You have to do like three different spots. I don't know. We could figure it out later. Yeah,
it's five spots, five shots each, right? So I mean, it's not, I wonder. I mean, I like his chances, but I'm curious.
I like his chances. That's an interesting point. That's not really how he shoots. I think Klay Thompson is just – that is how he shoots. He's got so much space. He's just like a spot-up shooter and one of the greatest ever at it. I really like Klay Thompson. If I had to bet on anybody, it would be him. Eric Gordon is just on fire this year. I think he's got a really nice shot. Kyle Lowry, I don't know why he keeps doing these things. He's a streaky shooter. He's just not like – I don't know why he keeps doing this. Paul George, I wouldn't count out. I think he's really good at this kind of spot up shooting and you know, he's a gamer, so I wouldn't put a pass to him to win. But look, it's cool that Ellington's in there now. Yeah, Beal too. Ellington now, look, with him and Goran Dragic making the All-Star game, the Heat will be relatively well represented at All-Star weekend, which is pretty cool. And kind of Goran Dragic talking with media today about how excited he was bringing his parents in from Europe and everything like that. I mean, he seems really jazzed up about the idea of going to the All-Star game. So just, it's cool that the Heat are represented there. And that I think is the most important part of this.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our next.
I was going to say Miami has a pretty strong history with a 3-point shootout.
That's true.
Four winners in their franchise history, more than any other franchise. I was seeing that according to the Heat press release. Very, very interesting. Yeah. Glenn Rice.
Shouts to Jason Capono.
Yeah. And Daquan Cook.
Capono is way higher in my all-time favorite Heat player rankings than he should be. I'm not sure exactly where he is, but he's definitely top 20.
Wow.
There's been a lot of players that I've always liked Capono. Just a good guy. Just seemed like a good guy. I don't know. Juicier news than Ellington making the three-point contest is that the Heat are interested in Damari Carroll. This according to The Athletic's Michael Scotto. Brooklyn has reportedly been looking for a first-round pick in return for Damari Carroll. That obviously is not going to happen if Miami is the one that lands him. The Heat would have to include one of their bigger contracts in order to do something like this. Dion Waiters, James Johnson, something like that. Probably not likely that the Nets would take on somebody like Waiters because he's injured and Brooklyn doesn't have a reason to tank because they don't own their pick. Probably wouldn't take on somebody like Kelly Olynyk, number one, because the Heat wouldn't trade Olynyk for Carroll. And the Brooklyn just has so many front court players already at that position. So the only thing that really makes sense is either trading James Johnson for Damari Carroll, which doesn't make sense a whole lot, or trying to or having Carroll get sent over in some sort of larger package. What do you think about this whole Damari Carroll situation?
I think it's BS. I think I don't know. Scotto, I mean, he's cutting his teeth still. He's part of the Steve Kyler chain over at Basketball Insiders. I guess he was geared up to be the next Alex Kennedy or something along those lines. But I don't know that he necessarily has that kind of influence or those kind of connections. Honestly, I don't know that he's ever actually broken any kind of inside news. Although we see him kind of tweeting these things out, or once they become fairly common knowledge, then he tweets them out, or kind of along the same vein as, you know, there's a potential interest sort of thing where it's vague enough where you can't necessarily ascertain whether it's true or false, or whether he has actual any kind of pull inside the front office. But the Damari Carroll fit just doesn't seem like a particularly good one. Like, I know he's a long wing player. He's an okay defender at this point in his career. He's come back from injury. Two injury-marred seasons with the Toronto Raptors. But he's not a real good shooter at this point. He's shooting 34% from three-point range. He's not necessarily the 3-and-D kind of guy that Heat would want. I don't know that they necessarily would want to give up somebody that they have, unless it's either to, you know, get rid of somebody like Tyler Johnson's contract, if they're willing to take him back, knowing that they were trying to sign him a couple years ago. You know, for Dion Waiters, I'm not sure if that's something that they'd be interested in. And James Johnson, maybe I'm the last person on James Johnson Island, but I think he still has enough value for this franchise where they wouldn't necessarily want to get rid of him for something like Damari Carroll.
Yeah, James Johnson is still better than Damari Carroll.
Without a doubt.
I don't know how many people would argue that.
You'd be surprised. I'm seeing a lot of people on Heat Twitter trash James, and I think they're kind of done with him. They expected him
to be in favor of Damari Carroll, though? I'm with you. I think a lot of Heat fans are done with James Johnson on Twitter a lot right now, but I don't think anybody would, in their right mind would say that Damari Carroll's better. But Damari Carroll is having a pretty good year, and Brooklyn seems like they are willing to entertain offers for him. They traded for Damari Carroll and a first-round pick from Toronto. So they have Toronto's first-round pick now and Damari Carroll, and they might ship Damari Carroll off for a first-round pick, or at least that's their aim, it sounds like. So they might end up getting 2 second-round picks out of Damari Carroll transactions here, but look, I don't know. Again, I don't know what Scott was reporting here exactly. Maybe Miami just called up Brooklyn and was like, "Hey, Waiters for Carroll." No, all right, and that might have been it. To me, the interesting thing about this is not that Miami is calling about Damari Carroll, but that Miami is calling for small forwards. I think that they are more, and this is me guessing, but I think they're more interested in small forwards than they are specifically Damari Carroll. And Damari Carroll is just one of those guys that's been sort of mentioned out there on the trade block. So maybe Miami phoned up Brooklyn and said, "What do you want for him? Let's see if we can figure something out." But I think it makes sense that the Heat would be interested in a small forward because Ronnie Magruder's been hurt. Justice Winslow's been moving around, playing mostly backup point guard more so than small forward lately. Maybe, you know, with Waiters out and Tyler Johnson starting, maybe the Heat want to move Tyler Johnson back to the bench to sort of bolster that unit. And that way they have to rely less on Derek Jones Jr., who's on a two-way contract. So how many times he could play again this season is kind of in question. And then maybe you can move Josh Richardson back to the two guard spot, his more natural position. You get a small forward in there who can hit some threes and defend at a relatively high level. That to me makes more sense. And there's a few guys out there that could be there. That said, Scotto did also mention that teams are interested in Justice Winslow. I just don't think that the Heat are willing to trade him, and there's no indication that they are. It just sounds like he does still have some value around the league, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm seeing the piece now from Scotto, and it's kind of, again, it's very vague. He does this 30-team primer on potential trade deadline possibilities for every team. And you know, he puts a couple bits in there about Miami, you know, that they believe Justice Winslow can be obtained in the trade market and that they have interest in Damari Carroll. I don't see it, dude, to be honest with you. Like, maybe Justice Winslow can be had. But again, I think knowing this team, knowing what they're angling for, if they're going to be trading the promise and potential of Winslow, who does contribute so much defensively, which the team does value, it would have to be in exchange for a potential star, a disgruntled player on another team. It's not just to pick up Damari Carroll and to pay him $13 million next year.
That said, because these are rumors, I had to go to the trade machine and come up with an idea. So you could just shoot this down immediately, but I want you to know. Should I not? Should I just avoid this?
No, let's do it. This is a potential. It's a potential.
Okay, all right. Now, I'm not saying I would do it, but this is the only way Damari Carroll's trade would actually work in my mind. Hassan Whiteside for Damari Carroll, Tyler Zeller, Nick Stauskas, his expiring contract, and Toronto's 2018 first-round pick. The reason Brooklyn does it, they are always rebuilding, right? But now, you know, with D'Angelo Russell in there, he's been playing well when he's been healthy. They've got a couple of nice role players. If you could pair up Whiteside with Russell, now you've got something there, two potential top 50 players in the NBA. And if you're tired of just kind of being a bad basketball team like Brooklyn might be, you trade for Whiteside, that kind of ups your ceiling a little bit more. Could be a way to sort of jock your way into maybe some playoff positioning, not this year, but possibly next year. And you get Whiteside, who's in a long-term deal. And if you're the Heat, you get Carroll. You get Tyler Zeller, who's got another year after this year left on his contract and could kind of fill in there for some spot center minutes. And then Nick Stauskas' expiring contract just to make the salaries work. And then moreover, you get a first-round draft pick out of the deal. So really, you would be trading Whiteside for Damari Carroll, a first-round pick, and a backup center, which isn't bad. If you kind of believe the reports that are out there, that would be Whiteside's value. Again, not saying I would do it, but it's the only thing I can come up with as far as the Brooklyn-Miami trade.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense. I mean, that seems like a lot for Brooklyn to give up. And they've got – well – I mean, I moving Carroll is one thing, although they've got him for a relatively cheap. Don't they want that first round pick? Isn't that like the reason why they acquired Carroll in the first place, why they were willing to assume his salary?
Yeah. But like Toronto looks really good this year. So I guess my logic was that, hey, that pick's going to be like somewhere between 25 and 30.
Sure.
Do we really want to pick another guy between that, or do we want to maybe use that pick and move him in a couple of dead money salaries?
Now they've got Jamal Okafor on the roster, and I mean, look, I know that he's struggling. I know he's struggling, but I mean, do they see him as their center of the future?
I don't think so. I think they see him as just an opportunity play. Okay. He just hasn't been that good. I mean, if he had been playing better so far for them, maybe, but he just hasn't.
Yeah.
All right, I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's just a fake trade that's never going to happen.
Okay.
I do want to spend some time talking about this Blake Griffin blockbuster trade that did happen. But first, if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but this is also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional media, and the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year, as opposed to people reading newspapers or listening to radio. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and your money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. All right, so Greg Monroe signed with the Boston Celtics. We're going to get to that here in a little bit, but let's cover this Blake Griffin trade first. Griffin sent to the Detroit Pistons for Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, and a first-round pick. Before we talk about what this means for the Heat, and it does have some implications on Miami, who do you like this move better for, David? Detroit or the Clippers?
The Clippers. To be honest with you, I think reuniting Bradley with Doc Rivers is a good move. They get a first-round pick out of it. Tobias Harris is a solid player. What does he have left, like a year or left on his deal?
Yeah, after this year.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, I think that's the good foundation to continue building on that. And I think, again, with Bradley's deal coming off the books, if you don't re-sign him and you're angling to acquire a bigger player, I think it's fine. Like, I think the problem is, and I've seen a lot of the – a lot of people kind of bounce back from this saying, you know, that we're devaluing Griffin. And that's not to say that Griffin is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. He's just, he can't stay consistently healthy. And we don't know that he ever is going to. And I think that's our, that was our concern when we were talking about him in free agency. He proved that those concerns were justifiable for most of the season. He's finally come back. And I mean, do we expect him to stay healthy for the rest of the year? Because I don't.
No.
I mean, like something's going to happen. He's going to get a hand injury or shoulder. He's going to tweak his leg somehow. I mean, it's going to happen. And that's unfortunate. And so as a result, I think Detroit winds up losing out. Like, I understand that your ceiling is higher now, but at the same time, you can't count on that ceiling staying stable at any point because of Griffin's health.
I actually love this deal for Detroit. Right. Just kind of considering where they're at, is they had no chance at ever getting Blake Griffin or a player of that type, that star power. You know, I think most of this was a play to fill that stadium. They are, you know, infamously bad at filling that brand new stadium that they built.
Little Caesar's Palace isn't filling up. What, and they're not giving away pizza enough or something?
You could not pay me to go to a game and eat Little Caesar's Pizza.
Yes, you could.
That said,
yes, you could.
Yeah, that's true. You could pay me. Little Caesars is great. We would accept Little Caesars sponsors.
Absolutely. I will dress in a toga for the rest of the season if Little Caesars sponsors.
There's no chance that we're getting them as a sponsor now.
I thought that would be an extra incentive for them. Anyway.
Okay, maybe not. It's a good thing this is a audio-only podcast.
Except for our patron listeners. They get a free video of me in a toga. Anyway.
There we go. For business purposes, I get it. But I also kind of like it for basketball reasons, just because where else were they going to go? You know, this is sort of a play on, all right, we've got Andre Drummond. He's been good for us. Tobias Harris is fine. Like, I think people are blowing smoke a little bit too much about Tobias Harris. Avery Bradley's gone after this year because we can't afford to re-sign him. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't even matter. And a first-round pick, whatever. Like, what are they going to do? Blow another pick on Stanley Johnson? Like, So it's just, from a basketball standpoint, I get it. You might as well just swing for the fences here and see what happens. If you could get the poor man's LA Clippers, if the Pistons look at that triumvirate of Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, and Blake Griffin as their version of Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin, but like a poor man's version of that.
Very poor.
I'm okay with that, especially if, you know, the Pistons still have some assets. Like, they could upgrade that Reggie Jackson position. Let's say Kemba Walker gets out there and they want to move Jackson, Stanley Johnson, and Luke Kennard for Kemba Walker in one of Charlotte's bad contracts. That could be out there for them. Who knows? Maybe they make a move for Dennis Schroeder, who seems to have a higher ceiling, for Reggie Jackson. Like, they are another move away from possibly being pretty competitive here. Blake Griffin has experience playing with rim running, rim protecting bigs like Drummond is. I don't hate it for them, and there was no light at the end of the tunnel right now or before, and now I feel like there is a little bit. So just from that standpoint, I just don't know where else they're going to go with this. Maybe it's just short-sighted of me. This contract is going to look bad in 3 and 4 years, but for now it's fine. Like, it's something exciting for them, and it's if your goal and their goal is to just get to the playoffs, if that's the goal, this gets them closer to that than what they were at before. And for that reason, I think it's good. And for the Clippers, it's just weird. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, because what this means for the Heat now is a few different things. Look, DeAndre Jordan now is the last one there from that trio, right? There has been kind of that idea floated about there that if the Clippers were willing to, and of course if Miami was willing to, doing a DeAndre Jordan for Whiteside swap. I wonder now if the Clippers would do it, because they just traded DeAndre Jordan's best friend. I don't know if you've ever been in that Clippers locker room, David, but it's quite obvious that those two guys got along really well. Like, they were best friends in that locker room. I wonder if now that you traded Blake, that DeAndre Jordan's like, I have no reason to stay here. Like, you are dismantling this team. You could trade me at any point. I've been on the trade block for what it feels like 3 years now. I'm leaving. And if that's the case, it might make sense for them to get something in return and fill that position. And Hassan Whiteside makes a lot of sense. And for Miami, that makes sense because you get off of Whiteside's contract. DeAndre Jordan's expiring, so you let him walk, or you could try to re-sign him because, frankly, he's just a better player than Whiteside. I don't know. There's a lot of options here. There's one less power forward on the roster on the trade block now that Blake Griffin has been traded. Kevin Love, with his injury, he's off the trade block. Does that make James Johnson more valuable? I mean, at its face, it doesn't look like it impacts the Heat at all, but there's a few trickle-down effects that do matter to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the case. A move like this also changes how Miami has to approach the trade deadline. Like, other teams are positioning themselves now to make a run either beyond this season or this season itself. And so I think Detroit, I think they see themselves as a legitimate playoff contender this year. Like, even if it's just to make the playoffs, I think that would make a lot of sense for them. I think it's something that they desperately want. And so the acquisition of Griffin, I think, helps in that regard. Right now, they're out of it. They're several games below 500. So it's not quite a factor yet, but it might be if Griffin's able to stay healthy and again play at a high level. So I think Miami then has to say, look, are we doing this? Are we actually engaged and ready for this season, or are we looking beyond that? And if that's the case, then maybe they can start trading away other players on their roster, including a guy like James Johnson. So the Whiteside for DeAndre deal, look, I think it's great. I think Miami would do it in a heartbeat if they could. I don't know that he is a more interesting piece for the Clippers if they're looking to rebuild in free agency. If they're looking to attract guys like Paul George, who's from LA, obviously, or LeBron James, who lives in LA, I don't know that playing alongside Hassan Whiteside over DeAndre Jordan is a factor. Like, DeAndre could opt out. He's got one year left on his deal after this one if he exercises his player option. He could just exercise – he could keep it and stay there for under the books for $23 million or $22 million, something like that. Or he could opt out and then become a free agent, and they could wind up signing him and LeBron James and Paul George if they have enough space there.
Now that you're saying this, is the Clippers' plan in free agency to be like, hey, if the Lakers can't clear up this cap space, because they still haven't done that yet, if the Lakers can't find a way to clear this cap space, just – you could come to the same building. You're just going to play for us and wear our uniform instead. I don't know. I don't know if that's – I don't think it's a good plan, but I wonder if that is their plan at this point.
I think it is. I think that's what the scuttlebutt is that they're kind of determining this from the front office perspective, that because of Blake's injury history, they couldn't reload with him. So they're looking more into the future, and this future includes free agency. They see themselves as a potential player in free agency that they can lure a guy like George to Los Angeles. So
I think your point is that with Blake Griffin going to Detroit, going from the West to the Eastern Conference, it does kind of put pressure on Miami to make a move, right? Because if you look at the Heat right now, they're in fourth place in the East. They haven't been able to get to third. We're wondering why. The reason why is quite clearly that they're just not one of the best three teams in the East. I think that's the reason why. And they're not going to sort of luck into third place in the East. And if you look at what their net rating is, they still have a minus one net rating.
Right.
And a lot of people kind of – that's been pointed out a lot. I'm not the first one to bring that up. And most of the times people say, oh, well, they've been playing better lately. That's really reflecting how badly they were playing at the beginning of the season. Their net rating since December 1st, when they really started taking off here, is only 0.6. They're not even outscoring teams by a point per 100 possessions since December 1st, when they have been presumably playing their best basketball. That is worse, by the way, than Charlotte. That is worse than the Utah Jazz, two teams that are not even sniffing the playoffs right now. So I don't know that the Heat are going to move up in the East. If anything, they're going to move down. And if that's the case, if Detroit is moving up and Boston is you know, going to stay where they're at, and Cleveland is going to stay where they're at, and Toronto stays where they're at, you know, things aren't – and if there are more teams in the East start making moves here at the deadline, who knows? I mean, Washington can make a move. Indiana can make a move. And all of a sudden, you know, the Heat are kind of looking at like, wow, the trade deadline passed us by. We didn't make a move. All these guys got better. And we might be fighting for our playoff lives here. The Heat made that run on a soft schedule. They're not going to have a soft schedule all the way through. So you're right. They do have a lot more pressure on them to make a move. And who knows? We'll see if they can do anything. It's not going to be easy for them.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that, you know, they might want to make a move, but a move might not be available to them because of the limited number of assets that they have. They'd have to trade a big contract away and maybe a young player like Winslow or Bam Adebayo. And I think they're reluctant to do that unless they're going to get something back in return of value. It's like they can't just shore up their roster with a guy like Carroll, or in Boston's case, a guy like Greg Monroe. You know, they need somebody. They would love to have somebody like that, but they're not going to be able to sign somebody like that. They're not going to be able to acquire somebody like that via trade. They're going to have to give
up
a lot.
There might be a couple, like, I don't know, maybe like a small tweak here, something better than Damari Carroll, but not quite Blake Griffin, right? And the other interesting thing about this Griffin trade is nobody was thinking Blake Griffin was on the block. When you talked about the Clippers, everybody was talking about DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they trade Blake Griffin. So that whole idea that anybody could be traded in the NBA is still true. Now, I don't know what player is out there that nobody's talking about that could get traded soon. I don't know if it's one of these Portland guards or if Kemba Walker suddenly is back on the block. Hey, by the way, Charlotte wanted an all-star. Michael Jordan said, you got to get an all-star back for Kemba Walker. Gordon Dragic is an all-star now.
He sure is.
That's all I'm saying. All right, we're going to debut a new segment next. But first, a quick reminder, make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and now you can listen to us on Spotify. Also, make sure to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. If you want a bigger perspective on what this means for the Pistons and the Clippers, go check out Locked On Pistons. Go check out Locked On Clippers for their take on the Blake Griffin deal. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, David, we're debuting a new segment on here. It's called Big Deal or Nah. So we're going to go through a couple of quick hitting news items here throughout that kind of hit the wire this week. And I'm going to ask you if it's a big deal or not. And then I'll come back with my response. And that's how this is going to work.
Sounds good.
All right. So the first one being that happened Friday morning. Greg Monroe will sign with the Boston Celtics. The Celtics will use their disabled player exception, the one that they got because Gordon Hayward played only a couple possessions of the season before getting hurt. They're using that DPE to sign Greg Monroe, add him to their front court, the best team in the East, presumably getting better. Big deal or not?
I'm going to say big deal-ish. Because
you already messed up the game.
No.
It's supposed to be hot take. It's very polarizing.
It's a huge deal. It is a monstrous impact to Miami. Like I said, you know, it changes the dynamic in the Eastern Conference. It really determines who's making a push for the playoffs this year, who really wants to determine whether or not they're going to be a playoff contender, a real title contender. Boston sees themselves in that regard. This is why I've argued this season that Miami isn't really a landing spot for guys that get bought out because they're just not a legitimate title contender. Boston is. So I think they see themselves in a position to add quality scoring off the bench. You never know if Al Horford might get an injury. Who's your backup center? Aaron Baines. He's limited in what he can do.
Daniel Theis. Yeah. I mean,
Monroe adds value. And I think he's been sitting there. Look, he was a pretty decent player for Milwaukee. His contract was a little onerous, but he got bought out. So it's not that big a deal. He wasn't going to fit into Phoenix's long-term plan. So they bought him out. To me, big deal.
You know, the other part about this is that he got bought out in the first place, right, from Phoenix. And you and I, through our various iterations of trading Hassan Whiteside deals, one of the landing spots that made sense for us, at least, was if Phoenix were willing to acquire somebody like Whiteside and maybe try to pair somebody with Devin Booker and make a little bit of a leap here, trading Monroe's expiring contract for Whiteside, maybe Monroe's expiring in a draft pick or a young prospect for Whiteside made sense. Now they don't have that expiring deal to move in such a trade like that and acquire somebody like Whiteside and the salary that comes with them. So that part is a big deal, I think. Or it probably isn't because I guess Phoenix was never interested in moving Monroe in a deal like that. They'd rather just buy him out and move on as opposed to take on more salary. But it is a big deal also because this is one thing that the Celtics needed was low post scoring. They just didn't have it. I mean, outside of Kyrie Irving, they just don't have – and Jason Tatum, of course, but he's a rookie. So, you know, how much can you trust Jason Tatum in the playoffs? Who knows? We haven't seen him in the postseason. But you get a guy in the low post like Monroe who has the post skills that he does that, as good as Al Horford is, not a post player. Aaron Baines, obviously not a post player. Daniel Theis is more of a stretch five – four types guy than a low post bruiser. He adds a different element to their game. And he gives them somebody who could score in crunch time, somebody who can just like in the last 5 minutes, give him a post up and let him go to work and get easy buckets that way. So if you're Boston, you're looking to really make a push here and really take and just take the throne or take the crown from Cleveland. This is a big deal. Our next one goes to LeBron and the Warriors. Apparently, LeBron has said he would consider the Warriors in this in his free agency this summer. This, according to ESPN's Chris Haynes. LeBron on Friday morning called these rumors ridiculous. Big deal or
not? Nah, not a big deal at all. I really think it's a lot of fun to talk about LeBron being linked to Golden State, but he's also been linked to practically 29 other teams, 28, I guess, because Cleveland is a team he's currently playing for. So I don't see it as an issue whatsoever. They'd have to move a lot of players, which kind of eats away at the chemistry they've built up over the past few years. I'm sure they're willing to do it to accommodate a guy like LeBron James, but at the same time, I just don't think it's a realistic destination for him. I don't think that's what he's interested in. Just acquire. Look, if leaving Cleveland already puts his potential legacy at risk, and although I think he's willing to take that chance, going to Golden State would be as much of a setback, if not more so, than him coming to Miami in 2010. And he was able to leap past that and get fans back onto his side. Halfway through his Heat tenure, he certainly cemented them back onto his side by going back to Cleveland in 2014. I think going to Golden State would just put a wedge there between him and the fans that will never be repaired.
Adam Silver's already thinking of ways to make sure this does not happen. This would be the worst thing for the league. I mean, it would be awful. They would lose so many casual fans that would just say, all stars want to do is get together and just win championships, and there is no interest in the league. And frankly, they would be right if that happened. This is not a big deal. There's no way this is happening. There's just no way. I don't care why. I don't even think LeBron will take a meeting. It just doesn't make sense. And I don't think LeBron would even want to do it. Not that I know LeBron, but
I think
not a big
LeBron,
deal.
To be honest with you. I mean, LeBron might know LeBron, maybe D Wade and a couple others, but I don't know. He seems like a pretty mysterious guy. He probably keeps to himself quite a bit.
Nikola Mirotic traded to the Pelicans. Big deal or not?
Nah, not a big deal at all. I mean, good for the Bulls to be able to get something back. Look, Mirotic needed to leave there. That relationship with Bobby Portis was destructive. I'm glad that he's able to escape that toxic environment. For the Pelicans, it's all about making sure that they make the playoffs, because the loss of DeMarcus Cousins really jeopardizes that, and that front office, that coaching staff, and half the roster are dependent on being able to say, look, we made the playoffs, even if it's just as an eighth seed. Even if they want to slip, right now they're currently higher than that in the standings, but if they slip even further and slip out of the playoff race, half that team is axed. So I think they need to show that they can at least hold on to a playoff spot and potentially angle themselves to re-sign Boogie, assuming that he comes back at full health and they're willing to offer him, well, probably a max, to be honest with you. I think even with the Achilles tear, I think they're still going to be able to throw max money at him. They probably want him back there because that partnership with Anthony Davis was working so well. And I think this, you know, bringing a guy like Mirotic, who provides size, 3-point shooting, and you know, some veteran savvy, is a good move for them. But it's not a big deal.
I think it is a big deal, and I'll say this only because I think anything that affects even remotely DeMarcus Cousins is a big deal. Yeah. Because this does affect DeMarcus Cousins in a way, because obviously he's sidelined with this is Achilles tear that's going to keep him out for the rest of the season. Of course, he will be a free agent this summer. This puts the Pelicans, not only does this give New Orleans a better player this year in Mirotic to sort of help them with this playoff push that they're kind of involved in here and pair with Anthony Davis in that front court, it sort of puts them in the driver's seat a little bit more. It gives them a little bit more leverage. If DeMarcus Cousins comes to them and says, look, I want X amount of money in these sort of clauses in my contract or whatever, the Pelicans could always be like, Mirotic played really well for us. Anthony Davis is fine playing center now, hypothetically, of course. You know, we don't necessarily need you here. I don't know that they would go that way, but maybe they could, you know, and if that's the case, then DeMarcus Cousins is available. Who knows what happens? Does he go to Cleveland? Does he go to play with LeBron or something like that? I don't know. It could still impact the league in a big way if he's on the move. And if you're New Orleans, you're able to re-sign Mirotic and Boogie Cousins, then all of a sudden that's a loaded front court that could be really, really good. And who knows what they do the rest of that roster, but I think just if you're New Orleans, this is the best way to sort of acquire good players.
Yeah.
And they're doing a decent job at that, even though they've done a lousy job at drafting.
Yeah.
And other free agent signings lately, they've been a pretty good team when it comes to trades. So I think it is a big deal for that. Plus, Jameer Nelson could get bought out now from the Bulls. So, and we talked about that on the last show this week. Washington is 3-0 without John Wall. They've beaten the Hawks, the Thunder, and the Raptors. Two out of those three games, really impressive. Bradley Beal said of how the Wizards are playing right now, this according to the Washington Post, it's fun basketball, Beal said of passing the rock around. Everybody gets a touch. Everybody gets shot. It makes life easier. It keeps the locker room close. It keeps the camaraderie going. At the same time, that's the type of team we need to be in order for us to be successful. Shots fired at John Wall, big deal or not?
I'm saying big deal. I think it is definitely a lob shot over at John Wall. He's injured. He's getting knee surgery, basically, and Bradley Beal's throwing him under the bus. Look, I think the relationship between those two has reportedly been shaky for a long time. Maybe it's been overblown. Maybe people are just looking for drama. But comments like this, maybe it's just Bradley Beal not being particularly good behind the microphone and not knowing how to answer something like this. But like, he has to realize that this isn't – like, you can't say this without seriously jeopardizing the team chemistry, which might be questionable to begin with. Like, I mean, Washington has more talent than Miami, and clearly they're still not able to – play at a high level. They've struggled for some time here. You know, this season hasn't been a very good one for them. They're still in the playoff hunt, obviously, and they could wind up surpassing Miami. But for now, I think comments like this really just make things much more difficult. Like John Wall has to hear this and go, what the hell is that supposed to mean? I mean, I'm the guy that does everything for this team, and you're talking like I'm not an important part of this group here moving forward. And I'm sure he would be very upset to hear these kind of comments. I'll be in that Washington locker room tomorrow. I'm curious to see if there's any kind of tension there, or maybe just the opposite. Maybe they're more relaxed without Wall. Maybe that puts Wall on the trading block, a guy that's been linked to Miami before, right? So very interesting. I say big deal.
I agree with you. I think this is a big deal. First of all, look, Bradley Beal already makes more money than John Wall. If he's giving better quotes than John Wall, he will become the de facto spokesman of the team. Which, you know, look, I know that a lot of players don't like doing media, but you know what's worse than not doing media? When you're an all-star player, a superstar player who deserves to be doing all the media, but you're not. And I think, you see this a lot, I think, with Twilight players sort of expect to be talked to, or I should say superstars who are in their Twilight, mm-hmm. you know, veterans kind of at the end of their career, who have used to be that guy, that face of a franchise doing all of the interviews, and now, and you know, towards the end of the career, they're not so much anymore.
D-Wade.
Sometimes it might bother them a little bit, you know. If John Wall is not getting the interviews and everybody is treating Bradley Beal like he's the star of the team now, that could be an issue there. And look, John Wall, we know, has not been happy with the way Washington has marketed him. He was upset that he didn't have a shoe deal for a couple of years there, even though he just recently signed a new shoe deal with Adidas. And if they're not winning, like you said, that might be the only option. I mean, if the Wizards are playing like this with Beal and without Wall, they're getting a litmus test for what that would look like. We've seen this happen with Scott Brooks teams before, where they see what a team looks like without one of their superstars, and eventually something happens. So I don't know. I'm all about what I'm saying here is that John Wall might not be happy. And if he's not happy, and the point here being, if Washington is happy without John Wall playing, then they probably should trade him, because they don't have another way to really improve that roster. Otto Porter is signed to a long-term deal. Right. Bradley Beal signed to a long-term deal. They've unfortunately got Marcin Gortat and Ian Mahinmi taking up $40 million of cap space at center, and they can't really play either of them in today's NBA. The only way to improve this team might be to trade your best player, you know, in a weird way, to take a step back, to maybe take a step forward with guys who are a little bit younger. You get some draft picks or prospects back for John Wall, and you use those picks to now build around Porter and Beal. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. Eric Spoelstra, Eastern Conference Coach of the Month, it was recently announced. It's his eighth time he's won the award. He had a 10-5 record in January, tied for the highest winning percentage in the month. That included six straight wins for the Heat. We know that they had a great January. Big deal or nah, Eric Spoelstra's award?
I think it is a big deal. I think it's hard to kind of quantify that, but I think it just goes to show that Spoelstra is deserving of all the talk, that he is one of the top five coaches in the league. Like, maybe the common fan doesn't think so. Like, maybe he's still a relative unknown. Maybe a lot of people still assume that he's playing or that he's coaching under the shadow of Pat Riley. I'm not sure what the average person might think, but I think those are thoughts that they do have about Spoelstra. Like, he's not considered one of the top coaches in the league for some reason. Now, people in the league, people that cover the league like you and I, obviously know Spoelstra's value. And I think players are starting to understand that Spoelstra's a guy who's very honest and direct. Look, in the wake of a firing of a guy like Jason Kidd, and there was a story that I saw yesterday about how he's kind of a person once explained to me that there are two types of leaders. Leaders that kind of build by bringing everybody together and having everybody on the same page to work towards somebody, or act in the opposite direction where they splinter everyone to see who will climb their way to the top, you know, instilling kind of chaos into a situation rather than unification. I think Spoelstra is one of the unifying leaders of the NBA, and I think he can get the most out of players. And I think this kind of award, a piece in the crossover that just came out about Spoelstra and the job that he's done lately, this season and beyond, I think these kinds of things appeal to players and front offices around the league to understand that Spoelstra is a guy that can get the most out of players, that is going to be in your corner, that is going to, you know, have a stronger reputation as time goes on. Like, I mean, Popovich, he's in his, 20-something year as the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs, but he didn't have that kind of reputation right away. It took time. And I think Spoelstra is slowly starting to work towards that.
You know, and if Eric Spoelstra winning Coach of the Year, if that were to happen, would be a big deal. These are the sort of things that you need on your resume to win that sort of award. So winning Coach of the Month here is a big deal. Look, I think that the Player of the Week stuff, the Player of the Month stuff is fun and is a big deal to some respect. But, you know, these are the sort of things that there's a lot fewer coaches in the NBA than there are players. You know what I mean? So to win one of these is a big deal, I think, because really you're talking about, yeah, there's 30 NBA coaches, but there's probably only, I don't know, a handful every month that really have a chance at this. And there's not that many great coaches in the league. So to be named one of the better coaches in the league really sort of sets you apart from the rest of the group. And Spoelstra clearly is setting himself apart. And again, this is a nice thing to have on your resume when reporters and stuff who might not be, you know, local media who might not be watching League Pass like you and I do, and a lot of like the modern NBA fans do, have to vote for Coach of the Year. They look at stuff like this, you know, which coach had the most Coach of the Month awards, or Coach of the, you know, Week awards, whatever it might be. So this is a big deal for Spoelstra, and I'm really happy for him. I think this is an awesome honor. You pair this whole week, you know, despite losing to Cleveland, and as bothered by people, I think that's people have a bad taste in their mouth about this week for the Heat. Look, Goran Dragic was named to the All-Star team. Wayne Ellington's going to the 3-point contest. Eric Spoelstra, Eastern Conference Coach of the Month here, all within this week. A pretty good week for Heat's PR. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with that. And I mean, it shows that the team's in a good place and that they have nice players on there. They have a good structure in place. And I think that's starting to come about more. They had a really, really good month, obviously. Hopefully they can sustain that for the rest of the season. And having a guy like Spoelstra earn that kind of recognition does wonders, I think, for the team.
We'll be back next week, but that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.